Machines. Before I get into individual tools and their attributes, I will just opine here for a moment. And it's just one man's opinion, so please don't get your knickers in a twist. I believe that you get what you pay for. Cheaply made tools, as a rule, will not have the accuracy and finish in their construction that more expensive tools have, so they won't work as well, so they will engender a lot more cussing on your part. This is a generalization, of course, but I have learned this lesson the hard way many times more than once. Reading tool reviews is a great way to find out which tool makers deliver the highest quality, or at least the best bang for your buck. With all tool purchases, be sure to look up as many reviews as you can find, because your fellow woodworkers may point out advantages or flaws particular to your own needs. Another OWS rule of thumb, the older the better. Again, this is very subjective, but the hand tools and machines that treat me and my maple the best are from a seemingly bygone era, when machinery was built to last. The fact that so many woodworking machinery companies have moved their production to Asia does not bespeak a general increase in quality. And so, when I need a planer or joiner, I comb the state of California for a vintage beast, made in the USA or Germany, because they are virtually indestructible. Now, like any rule, there are exceptions, like the hand tools of Lee Nielsen and Veritas, two companies that emulate the quality of vintage items. No matter from where or what era your tools arrive, take the time to tune them up and dial in all of their adjustable parts before using, to ensure their accuracy and also add a degree of comfort in your handling. One minor upshot of the tragic dearth of respect for the trades in our country is that a great many hand tools and machines are gathering dust in basements and garages in every town, waiting for you to find them. Ask around. You may be surprised at how generous people can be when they want to see their grandfather's tools get put back to use. Estate sales can also be a gold mine for old tools and clamps. Since renting my warehouse shop in 2000, I've had very good luck with acting jobs in that they have afforded me all the shop toys I could desire. That said, one thing I love about woodworking is that you don't need to land an NBC sitcom in order to afford some good clean fun. Here follows a compendium of the machinery in my shop, which is only lacking a wide belt finishing sander, as I can't bring myself to spend the money or the real estate, they are huge, to get one. If only there had been a Ron Swanson spinoff. Table saw. I've seen compelling arguments citing the table saw as the backbone of any woodworking shop, though I could make a solid case for the bandsaw as well. But why argue? Why not get one of each, or get the one that suits your needs best? The table saw is a very powerful tool for many foundational operations in the shop. Primarily, it's ideal for accurately ripping and cross-cutting lumber to size, but it can also be used to hog out dado troughs and rabbets, and, using the appropriate jigs and fixtures, cut joinery with great repeatable precision. Box joints, tenons, and even dovetails are a cinch when you have all the parts of your table saw system dialed in. If you're aiming to use accessories like a dado stack, then it makes sense to get the most horsepower your local grid situation can handle. I also recommend spending a little more cash on a large cast iron table surface. Trusting your table saw to remain flat and square to your fence is an imperative cornerstone in the shop. A beefy fence that can accommodate lots of different functions whilst remaining accurate is a must. Using those two channels in the tabletop to either side of the blade, known as the miter slots, can really tickle you. We have a crosscut sled with runners that ride in those slots that is perfectly dialed in to cut off the end of a workpiece at an exact 90-degree angle. Using an adjustable miter gauge that also utilizes one of the slots, we can cut off any angle as well on the end of a piece. These accessories, combined with the tilting blade feature of the saw, allow us to achieve compound angles as well as tapered pieces, like a table leg. Kickback is the second greatest peril awaiting you on the table saw. This exciting feature occurs when the wood traveling past the blade is tweaked out of parallel to the blade so that the spinning blade teeth catch the workpiece and hurl it back at the user with all the force of a Johnny Karate face punch. I have caught just such a piece of walnut right above my pubic bone that left me on my fanny on the floor, doubled in half, thanking the wood nymphs that I wasn't about 6 inches taller. Preventing kickback must command a great deal of your focus whenever you use the table saw. In the Marvel Universe, the demigod Galactus is known as the Eater of Planets, but in the woodshop, it is the mighty table saw that reigns as the most fearsome of creatures, or the Eater of Fingers. This invaluable tool is by far the one that must command the greatest respect in use, but I cannot speak on this topic without trumpeting a recent innovation that has changed the game drastically when it comes to reducing membership in the Nine-Fingered Woodworkers Club. I am speaking, of course, of the SawStop. In 2004, inventor Stephen Gass released his new SawStop table saw, which houses flesh-sensing technology that has effectively changed the face, or phalanges, of woodworking. Upon contact with human flesh, or a hot dog, as YouTube will attest, the mechanism shuts down the spinning blade in a microsecond and retracts it below the table, leaving the user's finger very lightly scratched but still attached, and wiggling with relief instead of tossed in a baggie of ice as it's rushed to the ER. Despite the 1999 emergence of his invention, the power tool industry has astonishingly failed to get on board with it, due to a morass of liability concerns and Gass's own demands for royalties that some consider excessive. He is a patent lawyer by day. I guess I shouldn't be astonished that yet another undeniable advance in workplace safety that would prevent thousands of injuries a year hasn't been implemented. According to the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System, NEISS, Americans logged an average of 36,400 table saw injuries per year from 2001 to 2008. But I am still astonished. It's hard to take sides in the convoluted battle, but I would like to expect more character from American tool companies. I suppose I am naive that way. We afford our corporations the rights of human individuals, and then we're surprised when they don't exhibit human traits like conscience or remorse. Silly rabbit. Even if Mr. Gass is trying to get paid for his brilliant invention, so what? How would we feel if automobile manufacturers refused to implement the seatbelt or the airbag because the innovators of those safety measures wanted a few dollars more? To my way of thinking, the fact that this technology has been available but not implemented across the board as long as my 17-year-old intern has been alive is just embarrassing. The opposing parties in this argument may be more concerned with their profit margins than our safety, but the good news is that doesn't mean you have to be. SawStop developed and released their own cabinet saw in 2004, as well as subsequent lighter-duty contractors' models for the job site. Gass is SawStop's innovator, but he's also a woodworker, and so he has engineered his dream tool that is every bit as deluxe as the best domestic saws on the market, plus his can't take off your fingers. In his glowing, fine woodworking review of the PCS 175 cabinet saw, Roland Johnson avers, "Overall, the SawStop PCS 175 is excellent. Throw in its safety device, and it's tremendous." If you have other people in your shop making use of your saw, and you can remotely afford it, then there's no excuse to refrain from upgrading to this tool. I have had macho acquaintances scoff at me on the topic, claiming that they know what they're doing, and I tell them that three of the people I know who have lost or nearly lost fingers are also three of the best woodworkers I know. It's often comfort with the machines that can breed the momentary lapse of attention that allows such an accident to occur. People also cite the slightly higher price as a dissuading factor, to which I would simply ask, when your employee loses three fingers in a table saw mishap, and you lose your house and shop paying for it, will you be okay telling him or her that you were just trying to save $800? Let the business worry about itself, and you worry about you and your shopmates. If you're looking for a table saw, look long and hard at the saw stop and ask yourself, how much are my fingers worth? Nearly as important as the saw itself is a sturdy and spacious outfeed table. Mine is massive, custom made by our charismatic neighbor Daniel Wheeler, with a beefy tube steel frame, industrial leveling feet, and a replaceable layer of quarter-inch masonite on top of a 1-inch Europly top. The adjustable feet allow me to dial it in perfectly level just a hair below the table saw surface for smooth sliding. This table was essential in a scenery shop when we were processing sheet goods, plywood, luan, masonite, etc., by the truckload. Some pro shops opt for a massive European table saw with a nifty built-in cross-cut sled / sliding table, but I've never felt the need to step up to that luxury. Perhaps with age, it will become a more attractive option. Hopefully, by the time my knees begin to complain, I'll be ready to pick up the SawStop sliding table model. I would be remiss here if I did not include a few words about Daniel Wheeler, a museum-level sculptor and maker who can seemingly fabricate anything you like out of impossible materials. If there's one thing that will help any shop or homestead survive, it's a benevolent neighbor or two, and this Wheeler fellow is that in spades. He's a generous collaborator, and we readily borrow tools and machine time from each other, although I think we at OWS get the better end of the deal. He's what I've heard some of my East Coast friends call a mensch, and we are incredibly grateful. If you don't have the space or means for a table saw, I always did pretty decently with a couple saw horses, a chalk line, and a circular saw, but nowadays you can get these newfangled hand saws in a guide track that are pretty spot on for slicing up sheets of plywood. You can also make your own out of plywood, which we always called a Norwood, obviously named after Richie Norwood, the inventor of the rolling paper. You can see a drawing of this jig in the accompanying PDF.